CliffCentral.com. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this Wednesday. Oh, I had to check what day it was. Like, I'm sure we have had a Monday, haven't we? We had a Monday. We might have had a Tuesday. I'm just checking. Okay. Somehow we're in the middle of the week already. It's amazing. I feel like I wasted a whole day yesterday. It was just too cold to go anywhere, so I pretty much did some shopping in the morning, which I haven't done for a while, so that the cupboard was bare, like in old Mother Hubbard's house, so I had to go out and do something. And I've decided I'm just going to live on soup and coffee and tea for the next couple of days, so that's all I bought. And then I got home, and I pretty much didn't move from one room the entire day. I just stayed in the warmest room I could find, and I didn't go anywhere. I didn't leave until I had to go and shower in the evening and get into bed. That was the only time I moved into a separate room. So it was kind of, I feel like I wasted the day a little bit. You know what I mean? Like a slob. I was basically a slob.
Is this eating plan of yours for the next couple of days the sequel to your first fitness book? You know, your first fitness book is...
There we go.
Eat less,
yeah.
Exercise more.
Eat less.
And now the second book is...
Please, it was eat less, run more. Let's get that right.
Run more. Yeah. How dare I?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very... It took me a long time to write that book, all right? Don't just say it like that, like it's just a thing that I threw out there. Oh,
what's
man.
His name? Tim Noakes. Shaking in his book. He's shaking in his boots.
He should be. My book's much better, and it's easier to read, and more people could digest it, which I think is very, very important.
It is a lot to digest, Gareth. You know, I had to break it down. I had to read it over a few weeks.
Yes.
But wow, it really moved me.
Thank yes. You. Well, you if you take it a page at a time, I find like that's when that book does its best. You know, digesting thousands and thousands of pages and so many words. I mean, it's just for many of us, it's too much of an issue. Who has the time?
Mm-hmm.
Who has the time? Even if you do take your fitness seriously. So yes, the eat less, run more diet is definitely the way to go. You're
and
only
now
a slob.
Followed up by soup.
Correct.
Soup,
I mean,
tea.
And now, because if you only eat soup, then basically you know. There's just nothing solid for your body to turn into fat. It all just goes straight through you, especially if it's a vegetable soup, which is what I have. So then you lose weight the natural way. You just basically you give your digestive system nothing to claw onto, and then you eventually you lose like kilogram after kilogram. It's fantastic.
I reached my soup quota when I first bought my. Blend. I don't even know what that appliance is
a
called.
Blender.
A blender. Is it? Oh. Is it a whatever? All I know is I've seen it at many kitchen teas as a gift for women. Anyway, I was so excited about it when I first got it, easily 3 years ago,
right.
That I just wanted to use everything as an experiment. Can you make tomato soup?
Sure.
Can you make carrot soup?
Right.
Can you make?
You just put everything in
watch
there.
Watch things work.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had to be called out by my flatmate and my friends, like, stop it with the soup now, because that was my speciality. Come on over, guys.
Do you remember?
Put things in there, whirling about.
Do you remember when we all went through a Nutribullet phase where everybody at Cliff Central was making juices of every kind? We were just all
Did
making.
Did you get one?
Yeah. I remember I bought one. And we had. We just made juices, and it was like, I think Dory's still doing it, but the rest of us fell by the wayside. Like, mine is still around, but I must be honest with you, I don't use it. So it's stupid because it's such a good machine. Like, you could put anything in there and turn it into a juice, and it's way healthier than, 90% of the stuff that we eat and that we fry and that we grill. And so it's still a way to go. But I must be honest with you, I've got to go and check if mine is still functional. Go and see if it needs a. It probably needs a deep clean because it's been lying in the dust and, in some back of some cupboard for such a long time. It's probably got a family of cockroaches living in it by now.
Oh,
you never know, hey. Okay. Like that always scares the hell out of me. I discovered the other day there was this leak under the coffee machine, and it was just it was so gross. By the time I eventually got to it, I just had to. I had to use bleach and disinfectant and shit, and I'm uptight about that stuff. So now I've reconfigured the whole thing and tried to figure out how to make it much cleaner. I can't stand a mess. You know me.
Ugh.
It's ridiculous. And we'll talk about a mess in a minute. I've got some info for you on how Singapore deals with its trash, which is pretty fascinating. I mean, Singapore in some ways is just, they are leading the way. The people of Singapore are just way, way smarter and quicker and cleverer and more adept at dealing with just about anything than I am. And I mean, than anyone in the world is, basically, except them. Let's welcome somebody to, can I, they're the ancestors, sorry. I might lose it, sorry.
These are the trees.
Yeah, I've just got to quickly do that. I need to let the dog out of this room, and I've closed the door. Just give me a second.
Oh.
I know. How irritating. What do you want, Carl?
Who let the dogs out?
I know. It's, isn't it?
Clearly pathetic? Just you.
This is what we have to do now. How professional is this show? Let me add to this morning's agenda by welcoming O'Neill Madumo, who's someone that Cliff Central audiences have known well for the longest time. O'Neill, you're, like, we can see just the bottom half of your head. How you doing,
yeah,
bro? Let me just switch on his microphone here. I think I can unmute
you're
him.
You're muted.
You need to unmute yourself there, dude. There he is.
Cool. I just did that.
There
cool.
we go.
How are you, man?
Hi, guys.
That looks like that looks like a very comfy room that you're in there.
Do I look as sleepy as I sound?
No. Welcome to our world. This is what we do every morning. You must hate waking up at this time because you're a night guy, right? I mean, like stay up late and wake up really late as well. It's the only way to live.
I don't even think I slept comfortably because after CS call, like, I slept so shallow because I kept on thinking. In fact, I had a dream about you, Sia.
Oh, no. You were sleeping on standby.
Yes. This is bad. I can't remember the last time I woke up around this time. It was a while ago.
Poor Sia. He's the guy who the rest of our audience, anyone who's ever been a guest here, he's the guy who's ruined their lives because he phones them at, like, you know, every hour of every day before they're on and has to check because, I mean, listen, he's not doing it to be a pain, but people are so useless and forgetful.
He has to.
And even for the TV show now, he has to call people like 100 times just to remind them.
Imagine.
You know you're on tomorrow. And then when they come on eventually, he also has to call that morning to make sure they're awake and that they're there and, you know, they haven't disappeared. So Pussy is like the
bad guy. If there's anyone who would be great at doing that, it's Sia. I mean, he's good at it. He's extremely cunning when he does it too.
Oh,
he makes his
Well, he's friendly.
Yeah, he mentions all these nice things like, you know, you just get up as if it's a small thing, and then if you want to go have coffee, you can go have coffee or champagne.
Mm-hmm.
You know what, Anil, give me like 3 more days and I'll master the violin and that'll be my new way to wake people up. Like, hey, okay, so I'll send you a text at this time and then I'll call you at this time. Then if you still aren't awake, I'll just walk into your room and start waking you up very gently with a violin. That's what people need.
So, Anil, what you missed in the first 5 minutes is we were talking about how, you know, I wrote that brilliant diet book, Eat Less and Then Run More, which was a huge bumper seller on you know, international book bestseller lists. And
yes,
I'm writing a
foreword.
I'm writing a follow up to it, which is just soup. That's all it says.
So, I mean, that's right up your alley, Benji. Yeah. Like, that's
exactly
you.
That's me. That's what people don't know this, but that's what made me famous. And now, you know, Carl is trying to be clever here because he thinks that I don't know what I'm talking about and I'm not an expert. So he says, Gareth, I'm not sure you understand how the digestive system works. Just because soup is liquid doesn't mean your body doesn't digest it and you cannot get fat. Highball. So, all right. What I meant, and now you forced me to be crude about this. But basically, if you only eat vegetable soup, your shit turns to water and you basically, it falls out of you, dude. It's not a question of, I know, but he wanted me to go there. He needs me to explain this to him like a child. So if you have soup, it's just very good for you because essentially the vegetables and whatever else is in the soup, provided you don't go and put tons of carbohydrates and shit in there, they will be like a what would you call it? A digestive. that's what they do. It's very good. It's very good for you. Trust me. Oh, hang on.
So doesn't it make sense that if you are going to drink soup, then you would shit soup?
It's certainly, that's my experience, that it does tend to open up the sluices at that end. I mean, that's what I think.
Yes, soup for soupy.
Yeah, like, correct. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this is not rocket science, Carl. I thought you were smart. What a fucking stupid comment.
This is not even a conversation I like having with my doctor. I don't want to.
Well, I mean, you asked me now. You're questioning my bona fides when it comes to writing my books about the diet. You know, Carl. I mean, come on.
Wow.
This is what I take this very seriously. Nico says though it's too cold for juices. My apples in the fridge for 3 weeks now. They still look good. Yeah, it's amazing. Hey, when it's cold like this, things just don't go off. I noticed I bought bread last week and it lasted the whole week. And normally bread by the fourth day in the summer is like starting to, develop its own life. But
this is true. This is so this cold. Is true. I also bought, I think it's scones or something from Vovotelo.
Yeah.
Because I have such a sweet tooth. It's a bad thing for somebody my age. So I've got like sweets everywhere. So it's been lasting, and I've been saving money thanks to winter. And I really hate winter because I'm from a desert. I'm from Botswana. Botswana is as hot as you can imagine. So whenever it comes to winter, it becomes a struggle. But I've been realizing the same thing as well, that I'm able to keep, whether it's vegetables, for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been good. This has been good, at least. This is the one good thing I can take out of this.
Tell me, O'Neill, how often do you get to go back to Botswana? How often do you see the peeps back there?
Not as often as I used to. Because of the volatility in the situation, I mean, the COVID situation is pretty similar to the South African one.
Yeah.
Botswana has a lot of trade with South Africa.
Sure.
So that being the case, there's a lot of caution between Botswana and South Africa as far as borders go. So I try not to, because of how small the population is, I try not to expose my family to it. So I move from going every week to every 2 weeks, then I move from 2 weeks to every month, and then from that it's like every 3 months. But now it's like once a year. But my son does come here.
Right.
He prefers coming down here. My mother does come here. I don't come from a big family, so that also helps.
Yeah.
I do have like extended family members who I am the odd cousin who doesn't show up for family events.
That brings up issues.
Then you have problems because then they think you're ignoring them.
But I think being a DJ for most of my adult life, I think it helps because they always assume I'm sleeping until like 1 p.m. So.
And they're just not used to having you there.
Yes.
You know,
so that helps.
We always tend to think of every country as being equal to every other country. And we forget that in South Africa, we've got a population of some 60-odd million. In Botswana, you guys have only got like 2.3 million people or something.
Yeah.
It's small.
Yeah.
It's really small.
It's a very small population.
Really, that's like the population of, I don't know, Bloemfontein or something.
Yeah. It's that small. Botswana is...
And most of the people do live in Gaborone, huh? Most of the people do live there.
Yeah, the population of Gaborone, the last time I checked, was around 250,000. It could have grown. If it has grown, it is probably just around 300,000, but not much. It's a very small country. So when we have a pandemic like this, we have a lot to worry about.
Yeah, of course. The smaller the country, the kind of harder it gets in there.
Imagine if we did the same numbers as India. Oh, knock on wood.
Yeah, Jesus. I mean, I still don't know how they're – I don't know how they're coping. But the reason I ask, though, is because I know you get around. Like, you actually travel. You know, doing the DJing, and you're back on that. Hopefully, it's picking up again.
Yeah.
Because that was shut down completely for a while. And you travel the whole of South Africa and Southern Africa, in fact. I mean, it's not odd for me to hear from you, and you're in – either Zim or Botswana or like Namibia or South Africa or some part of South Africa that, you know, I didn't expect you to be in.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's been a while since we've had you on Cliff Central. I had you on the TV show not so long ago.
And, yes, that was fun.
And people miss your show. I mean, they, you know, I get, not a week goes by where we don't get an email from somebody who says, you know, I miss those shows and I miss O'Neill's show, because your show was always like full of really cool stuff. And you still keep in contact with all those musicians?
I still call you 00C just for
he does. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, does that. Yeah, look, I keep in touch with them. In fact, it's funny you mentioned that. I ran into a record executive. His name is Yoel.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in Pakistan over the weekend. And he says to me, he's traveling. I think he's going to, he is French, but I think he was going to the UK or something something to do with his artists. This guy, by the way, owns, I think, the biggest catalog of South African music. He bought it, I don't know, from whether it was Samro or something like that. It dates back to the 60s. So anyway, so I ran into this guy. He has brought in a couple of artists onto my show. I ran into him and he says to me, dude, I want to get back in the game. And I say to him, why? I mean, there's a lot of young people now podcasting. He says, no. There was a way in which you conducted your interviews and you had such a rapport with the artists.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that I didn't realize myself, you know. So now I'm only hearing those stories now. So, you know, to add to what you were saying, a lot of people are asking for it. They feel like there's a gap in the market for what we were doing. So, I mean, who knows? Well, maybe it's time.
I think what was so cool about it is that you didn't just do these interviews with these artists. You also used to make them play in the studio for you, which is always, you know, any performer is always better at performing than they are being put out of their comfort zone. I mean, most people, you know, even if I've interviewed musicians, and I have, you know, 1,000 times, they prefer doing their thing, which is making music. So if you put them in a situation where they're comfortable, they're playing their music, and then they're talking to you, to them, it feels like they're just jamming with friends.
No, that is true. That is the language they understand. You mentioned that just 2 days ago, I discovered, I'm a huge fan of rock. So 2 days ago, I discovered on YouTube, I think it's the 35th anniversary of Toto, of the band Toto.
Oh, wow. What a great band. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's amazing. You need to watch that thing. It's like 2 hours long. What I picked up about, I think those guys speak in those 2 hours. They probably speak about 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just in between songs, you know, but throughout the time, they are just performing.
There are so many of those songs that just immediately make me happy. I mean, I mentioned that there was this friend of mine who came out to visit from America a couple of weeks ago, and he's back now in Dallas. But I took him to the – in fact, there were about 5 of us who all went to the Toto concert when they came to South Africa. This is like – it was Standard Bank Arena. It must have been in the late 90s. And
wow,
yeah, I mean, you know, they weren't in their prime anymore, but my God, can those guys play, hey? And Steve Lukather, who's their guitarist, when that guy plays the guitar,
one of the best.
Oh my God, he just so this friend of mine is a guitarist and he's a session musician and he can play pretty damn well. I mean, I'd say he's, you know, he's in, I mean, when he was in South Africa playing, he used to play for recording artists, and you know how hard that is. You have to just do exactly the same thing over and over again, and it's harder than people think. But I remember watching him standing there watching Steve Lukather, and he had like tears streaming down his face. He was so into it. I mean, I've never been to a concert and started crying, so that took me by surprise. But you know, they've got so many good songs, that band, and I just love the fact that bands like that have lasted for decades, not just, you know, they don't have the lifespan of, I mean, God bless him, but even like Justin Bieber's finished now. I mean, he's done, right? He doesn't do anymore.
That is, That is a very good observation.
He did like 10 years, and now he's finished with that. And Toto, they were there for probably the whole of the 80s, the whole of the 90s,
yeah.
and their music is continuing to live on. I don't know anybody who's still listening to Baby from, you know, Bieber.
No, is absolutely true. I think Toto was formed in 1977. They performed throughout the 80s, the 90s. They performed throughout the time. And I think they've only lost, I think one of their members died in 92 due to some form of cancer. But they're such a well-oiled machine. One of the things I think that made them so great, even when I was watching the show itself, is that each one of their iconic songs has a different lead singer.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Oh.
So that's how they were able to sustain themselves throughout the performance, because Africa will be performed by someone else vocally, and then Steve will do something else.
I remember at that concert they did Africa, which obviously everyone went crazy for, because we all think that they wrote the song for us, and maybe I don't know, but it is like if there was an anthem for the continent, it might even be in the top five, right? And even though it's rock, even though it's rock music, anywhere you play that in the world, there isn't a person from Africa who's not gonna like, hey, that's mine. So that was great. Yeah. And then they played Hold the Line, which is also just amazing. Love isn't always on time. What a great song. And then you think it can't get better than this. And then they went off stage. I mean, the fact that I still remember this however many years later is ridiculous.
Gosh.
And then they came back for an encore, and I was like, what are they going to do now? They're going to repeat one of those? They came back and they did Rosanna. You know, I want to do when I wake up in the morning is see your eyes. Rosanna, there isn't any way you could touch that. I mean, it's like, it's just so goddamn good.
Nah, it's a listen, man. It was such a joy. I couldn't leave my house. Like, for 2 hours straight, these guys were not even breaking a sweat.
Vocally,
they are still there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like...
Sia, we apologize profusely for this confusing period in your life. We know, you know, this is...
Realized, Gareth, as you reference, like, 1999, perhaps, that's 20... more than 20 years ago.
It's so long ago, dude. It's so long
Let
ago.
Let that sink in for a moment. But you know, great memory.
Those great bands, they don't age. They keep getting better. It's just amazing. There was something I wanted to say about this. You need to, just this morning, before we get to the headlines, O'Neill, you need to quickly do one of those. You watch enough YouTube to know what it is. Do that and subscribe shit for us, because we force everybody to do it because I'm so bad at it. So what you need to do is you know, you're on screen on your own. Just, you know how to get people to do the like and subscribe, because otherwise, if we don't remind people, they don't do it. Go for it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Sia, why didn't you tell me about this part?
Just go, hey, everybody, don't forget to like and subscribe. And then you point at the, you know what to do.
Hi, everybody. This is O'Neill. Please don't forget to subscribe to our channel if you like the content you're seeing right now. We'll be back to smile with you.
There we go. You see, that's
everyone
what we need.
Everyone knows how to do it.
Everyone.
Exactly.
Because we've all seen it a million times.
Yeah. Way too much. And now we're in that space, O'Neill. We have to ask people to like and subscribe.
And the funny thing is, that's the part I hate about watching things.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Yeah. I'm always like, no, we get it. We have to subscribe. I'm always saying that. So.
I think Tracy's being rude about Botswana here. She says... 2 million people, 5 million donkeys.
Wow. Wow, the animal jokes, right? You know what, Tracy, you might think you're trying to be funny, but you are not, because we have such a strange relationship with animals in Botswana. I think animals account to easily about 50% of road accidents.
Yeah.
In Botswana, that's why.
I've heard that.
Yeah. So we have 5 cows to each person. By the time you're 5 years old, you have minimum of 3 cows. they've already been assigned to you. You have a minimum of 3 cows, maybe 5 chickens, and then 5 goats, and then 5 sheep. By the time you're 5 years old. As a matter of fact, interesting story, the first university in Botswana, University of Botswana, when it was first built,
yeah, mm-hmm.
the community each contributed 2 cows towards the building of the first University of Botswana.
That's fantastic.
Because you can use cattle as collateral in Botswana.
I think you can use
it's
cattle.
Such a I think you can
do so.
I think you can even do it in South Africa, but you guys have a much more of a relationship with that than we do. I love the fact that everybody contributed, because then, of course, everybody feels that they own a piece of the university, so they look after it. The problem in this country is that nobody, yeah. You know, everybody in South Africa thinks it belongs to the government, which it definitely does not. And
yeah.
You know, and that's why we burn shit down. And, you know, if we are angry that the train hasn't pitched up today, we burn the station down. We forget that it's our money. It's our collective investment.
That's
that
always weird to me.
That's very weird. It doesn't happen in Botswana, thank God. Anyway, O'Neill is with us, and we're going to be talking to him this morning, and he's going to be hanging out with us for the first hour and a half of the show this morning. We've also got something very cool happening a little bit later on, which I want to tell you about. It's got to do with wellness and health and how it's a bigger deal than ever. This morning we're going to tell you where you can go to find credible medical advice, because God alone knows we're all trying to find that information more than probably in any
it's
other year.
It's definitely not Dr. Google.
No. The worst thing you could do is go on WebMD if you're not a doctor. That stuff will confuse the hell out of you. And we'll talk to the people from Cipla this morning. In fact, we're going to speak to the CEO. His name is Paul Miller, and see what they have to tell us about all of this. That's, of course, a pharmaceutical company. And, the pharmaceutical companies get given a really tough time, but I think we have a lot to be grateful to them for after this pandemic. It's shown us that they're the ones who developed the vaccines quickly. They're the ones who came up with solutions. And although people say terrible things about pharmaceutical companies, I think we owe them a debt of gratitude for having helped us through this pandemic as quickly as they have. There's no way that that state research could ever have kept up with the way that they invested back in, did the research and development, and came up with these things.
Yeah. Look, I think every industry has its chinks. I think I would rather have somebody who steals from me but then tries to save my life than our favorite politicians who take everything for themselves. Like, that's always very bizarre to me. If you're going to steal, not that I have any level of understanding on stealing, but just logic dictates, if you are going to steal, if there's $100 million at your disposal, can you at least steal about 50% of that, and then the other 50%
you can keep things
do
going.
Something.
Yeah.
But no, not here.
I think it's so sad that we've reached that level in our country, in society, in the world, where we go, actually, okay, fine, we're lowering the bar to say steal, but don't steal too much. It's actually really sad.
Well, there was this brilliant tweet that went out just the other day from somebody who said, hey, politicians, let me help you out. The better the economy goes, the more you have to steal. So help us get the economy going. And I mean, that's how you have to talk to these assholes in politics, because that's the only language they understand, is how does it affect their bottom line, you know? So maybe that's the way we've got to talk to them. Say to them, look, if we're all making more money, there's more for you to steal. If you actually help people to not be poor and impoverished, if you help us create jobs, if you deregulate the economy and let people work, if you create the opportunities that make business easier, then there'll be more for you to steal. That's how we have to tell them.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Incentivize them.
I've got to get to some headlines here. Let's hop into that quickly. You know, while we're on politicians, we may as well depress ourselves with a bit of headline news. Stage 2 load shedding is going to start today and run until Sunday. Oh, thanks a lot, Eskom. This is great.
Fun.
Yeah, from 10.
My God. Eskom implementing stage 2 load shedding from 10 a.m. on Wednesday until Sunday night. In a statement released on Wednesday, the utility said that rolling power cuts were due to delays in returning generation units to service at, listen to this, Kusile, Tutuka, Duva, Kendall, and Coburg power stations. All five of those stations are causing shit now because they haven't been looked after properly by these idiots at Eskom. These people who we pay way too much money to give us very crappy service. And, of course, that's because...
Again, I'll reiterate, it's the worst time for this to happen.
Ugh.
But I have to just share quickly. I thought I was dying in the middle of the night last night. So I had the heater on in my bedroom.
Yeah.
And load shedding hit my area at about 8 p.m.
Yeah.
So I actually went to bed with the electricity still off. But what I didn't realize was that the heater was on.
Uh-oh.
Did I not wake up at about 1 or 2 a.m.?
It was hot.
My room was so hot. And I just opened my eyes and I'm just seeing this like red all over. I'm thinking, am I in hell? I was so parched. Even I was feeling dizzy. I had to sum up the energy probably to get up and switch everything off now.
That's the problem, right? Like around that time, like you've built up enough sleep and you're so comfortable in your position that you feel like any amount of activity will throw the sleep off. Like you're gonna lose your sleep.
It does.
Because it's,
you know, there's a,
it's the TV you have to switch off, yeah, the lights,
yeah, yeah,
all of that.
There's another problem here, and this is a much more serious one, is that I reckon there are probably a lot of fires because of this. You know, we hear often about these houses that burn down, and we hear about shack fires and all of that stuff, because people go to sleep having forgotten what they left on, and then the load shedding finishes, and everything comes back on, and people don't realize, like, there's a blanket over the heater, or there's something that they left on in the kitchen that they shouldn't have left on. Man, that's dangerous as all hell, because we do already have a problem with that in South Africa, and this is the time of year it happens more than any other time. All right, so while we're talking about Eskom, of course, Eskom's disaster is because the ANC has run it badly, but the ANC has pockets of really bad and pockets of even more bad in them. I mean, here is a story about the MKMVMA. That's the Mkhonto weSizwe Military Veterans Association. They say they remained in the dark. The ANC's National Working Committee on Tuesday went ahead and appointed a preparatory committee to take it to its elective conference. So this is all about internal politics again, but you know how this is. We have to pay attention. The National Working Committee held a meeting on Monday. And the MKMVMA, which is spearheaded by Kebi Mapatswe, he's the guy who was in the porno with the one arm. You remember him. That's how we remember people in this country.
I still hate you for making me Google who he was just to see the one arm. And then now my imagination runs wild to what the porno was like. Anyway.
But did you find the actual porno?
There's a video of him. He's paying some woman after they've had sex, or he's busy like getting her something. It's crazy, dude. And he's standing there, and I think he's in his underpants, or he's even completely naked. It's so, just so.
Was it nice underwear at least?
Nuh-uh.
Sia, was it nice underwear?
I didn't watch that. Thank you very much.
So bad.
It's funny and sad how we judge people like this.
I still remember.
Do you remember Joost van der Westhuizen's scandal? All I remembered about that, all I took away was that Joost had a hole in his underwear and socks. Thought, from Springbok legend to holy underwear.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, no, look, we go through a lot in Africa.
Well, apparently the former generals have been roped in to help the two warring factions in the ANC's former combatants to hold a united conference in the coming months. They're going to call on Kebi Mapatswe. He rang a bell insisting there were attempts to dissolve his association. He now said he believed that was not the case. So they can't even decide what's happening in the ANC. But there was another story, and we'll get to this in some detail a little bit later on. Did you hear about the woman who had 10 babies?
I saw that.
Yes.
There's a hashtag even.
Yeah, we
National Baby Shower.
Yeah, we'll get to that just now. Before that, though, Health Minister Zweli Mkhize has apologized for the fallout from the digital vibe scandal as calls to sack him get louder. The minister answered questions from journalists during a visit to health facilities in the Northern Cape on Tuesday. He says his intention is not to dodge questions, but to make sure he fully cooperates with the SIU investigation. this is so funny because, as I said, don't forget that Zweli Mkhize was the guy who was the ANC treasurer during the Zuma years. So he was the guy in the ANC who was responsible for making sure that they got donations and that they accounted for their money during the Zuma years. I mean, that should disqualify you immediately, right?
Let it just be known, though, that the minister and his team announced on Monday evening at about 11 p.m.
Yes.
That he'd be in the Northern Cape doing this visit and they welcome the press to ask questions. You are sending this out at 11 p.m. You're going to be there on Tuesday morning. Who do you think was able to read that in time?
And he's in the Northern Cape. And he's in the Northern Cape, there's less people in the Northern Cape than there are in the furthest parts of Botswana. So,
I mean, guys, I'm still stuck on the name of the company, Digital Vibes.
I know, it's so bad, right? Isn't it terrible?
Like vibes, that should have been the first thing.
Yeah.
This first sign of concern for me. If I were to sit down with anyone and they were running a company and they said, my company is called Digital Vibes. That's like a boyfriend showing up to their, in-law's house and they ask him, what's your name? And he says, my name is Killer.
Exactly.
That's the first thing we have to deal with.
Well, you want to watch...
That's a very good point.
You want to watch our TV show tonight because Lihlem Simang had something similar to say about Dr. Zweli Mkhize. And you don't want to miss it. That's this evening on Cliff Central, not on Cliff Central, on ENCA channel 403 at 10 p.m. They've moved the time.
So what now?
Yeah.
Let's all be comforted. Yes, Gary?
No. Go on.
Let's all be comforted by the fact that with Dr. Zweli Mkhize on leave, we have a trusty new minister in his place.
Mm-hmm.
That is our
tourism.
Yeah, formerly Minister of Tourism and now Minister of Health. In these great times for health, right?
Who?
All we need is someone who's an expert in tourism to step in.
Who's the minister?
I have no idea.
I'll tell you now.
Oh, God. You know, ANC just redeploy people. They don't even have experts in any field.
So. I know her name is long. That's what I remember. Yeah, it's actually quite long.
Let's see what this name is. I'm interested.
Kubai Ngubane.
Oh, God. She was in charge of communications. Ngubane. She was the one I presented to in Parliament with Thibaut Touch about reducing the cost of data, and nothing fucking happened there. I don't believe she's got any value to add there. I mean, she's not a medical expert, so she's stepping in.
Yeah, like the correlation between tourism and health to me it still eludes me.
What a stupid idea.
I don't know. Maybe she's going to make sure that borders are open. I don't know what her mandates will be.
But the one good thing that came out of it, good thing that came out of it when people are analyzing this redeployment. Is that people didn't even realize that deputy ministers are not part of cabinet.
Exactly.
The most natural thing in this particular case would be, okay, so the deputy minister of health will obviously take over.
Correct.
And
that's what you think.
We learn, so they're not part of cabinet. So they have to be appointed in order to be in those roles.
It's stupid. It's so obviously, I mean, like if the president's not there, the deputy president takes over. If a minister's not there, the deputy minister should take over. But that's not how it works. Deputy ministers in this country are just, they're basically, it's sheltered employment. That's the only way I can describe it. Anyway, there is a very sad story that comes from Burkina Faso. Thousands of women and children have fled Burkina Faso. 7,000 people from the volatile north of the country following the bloodiest massacre in a six-year jihadist insurgency that continues to get more and more violent. steps have been taken to give displaced people a minimum level of comfort, lodging, and foods. That's from the Prime Minister, that statement. Apparently, his advisors told AFP 7,600 people had fled to Sebha, which is the capital of Yaga province. So it's around 15 kilometers from the scene of an attack on a certain village. 7,000. Can you imagine 7,600 people picking up their stuff and fleeing? You know? That this still happens.
No, that's...
This is the kind
that's
of thing
horrible,
that you expected this to happen, like, you know, back in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, even maybe the 70s. But in 2021, for people, 7,000 people to pick up their stuff and flee, it's just bizarre. So Burkina Faso...
But we've also grown so insensitive to this. I don't know.
No, you're right.
If I just feel this way, it's almost like 7,000 would be acceptable as compared to like 10,000. So that's how we view these things now. It's almost like, no, at least it's two people. It's not like 10 people. But no, one person should not die. One person shouldn't have to be displaced because of a power struggle between two people who don't seem to get along. Like, that's just ridiculous to be able to have to deal with this today.
Or in this case, it's like an Islamist jihad, which is just so ridiculous. I don't understand why people are still trying to punish other people by the sword, you know? It's just madness. It's really, really stupid. And obviously 7,600 people, guaranteed that most of those are women and children who have no option but to run because the men are at each other's throats or have already been killed, or, you know, it's always the women and children who have to pick up the slack, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what the capital of Burkina Faso is? My favorite capital city to say.
Is Djibouti a country or city?
Actually, Djibouti is a country. It's Ouagadougou.
Never mind. Oh, Ouagadougou.
Yeah, and you spell it O-U. It starts with an O-U. Ouagadougou. How's that?
Sounds like the sequel to Waka Waka.
Shame.
Yeah, or something they call out when people are being beheaded. Like, I don't know. It's just
Ouagadougou.
Oh God. Let's not make light of these people suffering by making fun of their stupid capital city's name. All right. In a story which, you know, there's not a day that or rather a week that goes by that we don't end up with some rich person making the news, and this week is no different. Details claiming to reveal how little income tax billionaires in the US pay have been leaked to a news website. ProPublica says it has seen the tax returns of some of the world's richest people, including Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, and Warren Buffett. The website alleges Amazon's Mr. Bezos paid no tax in 2007 and 2011, while Mr. Musk paid nothing in 2018. A White House spokesperson has called the leak illegal, and the FBI and tax authorities are investigating. Now, why would the White House be jumping on this, calling it illegal? Surely the White House would be jumping on this going, well, let's check these people out, because there's no way that someone who has billions and billions like those guys shouldn't be paying any tax. Right?
You know what? I find myself, like, I really have zero to add on this, because for some reason, I stopped paying attention to the White House the minute Trump left. There was just nothing interesting for me going forward. I find it very bizarre. Like, honestly, do you know, I find myself actually looking for links where I can find Trump.
Oh.
That's how much I miss Trump.
Because he was at least...
I miss Trump so much.
Mm.
Yeah. So one way or the other, he got our attention. We got interested in politics. We got to have in-depth knowledge on what really goes on in the U.S. because he exposed everything. Everything was on Twitter. And now I find myself having to, the irony is that I don't find the news that we see on the feed credible, because I feel like it's too prepared and there's just like some kind of sinister motive behind it.
It might also
thought of it like that.
It might have.
But when you knew it came from Trump's account, it was him speaking directly.
Correct.
There was transparency.
Yeah.
That's what we're missing about this entire thing. Mm. There was a level of transparency. Sure, it wasn't the usual prepared establishment rhetoric,
mm-hmm.
but there was a level of transparency which we don't give him credit for.
Well, you knew what he was thinking, right? Because he didn't hold back. And even though a lot of the stuff that he said people had a problem with, you've got to admit that you did at least know that this was coming from him. This woman, this Jen Psaki, she is in charge of the White House press corps at the moment. This woman here, you remember her? And she just looks like, first of all, she looks like the kind of person who would be able to lie with a straight face on any given subject.
I might
be being mean here, but she looks exactly like the type of person who would say to you, "There's nothing going on over here," while she was stealing your wallet with her other hand. I mean, that's the impression I get.
She also looks like a younger Kate Blanchett. Like,
that's not
a very assuring look.
I've watched her every time she answers a question. I struggle to believe her. I really do. And it's not because I don't like Joe Biden, which I don't. And it's not because I don't consider him a crazy old man. I just think that she's the kind of person who's she's just a spin artist. That's what she's there for. She's there to spin stories.
Yeah.
If she was your girlfriend, you would always be going, am I being duped here? Is she lying to me?
Yeah.
Is she putting up a front?
Yeah.
Is this a story that she wants me to believe? Anyway. Let's move on because there is there's more news. I do want to talk about that woman who had 10 babies, but that can come up in a moment or two. We've got to talk about Singapore for a second. I mentioned this. That's such an amazing country. There's stuff that happens in Singapore that just blows my mind, right? Even the way they handled the coronavirus, I remember right from the start, they seem to have done that better than anyone. Now, this is quite a long clip. It's like 2 minutes, but it's worth watching and listening to because this is how they deal with rubbish in Singapore, and I was sent this by Gideon, who listens to the show, and I think it's just brilliant. Just take a listen to this. If it gets too long, I'll cut it off halfway, but it's worth taking a look at, right?
Singapore is a tiny country. It's this big, and it has no space for trash. So here is how they got rid of it. First, they collect the entire country's trash from here, here, and here, and drive it to this big building to burn it. Inside this incineration plant, there is a fire that burns 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And this 1,000 Celsius degrees fire eats the trash away and generates heat and energy to light up thousands of homes.
From our incineration process, we harness the heat to generate electricity.
But here's the crazy part. This fire behind me doesn't even hurt the environment.
When you burn trash, it generates toxic smoke like this one. And these guys filter out the smoke in a complicated process to make it so clean, cleaner than the air around you. So this chimney at an incineration plant emits clean air.
The air come up from the chimney is smaller than 1 micron, which is very, very clean.
By now, 90% of the trash disappears in a couple of hours and the remaining 10% turns to ash. This ash, just like the smoke, is toxic. They take it and ship it far away to a man-made island where they dump all of it into a special water that doesn't touch the ocean water. And there, ash stays underwater forever, hidden from everyone. This process is so clean, the corals are still alive, the jungles are still green, and the animals are still around at that island. In other words, Singapore collects trash, burns it, creates electricity, filters out the smoke, hides the ashes underwater, and makes this trash bag disappear in one day.
I just love that. You know, they've thought about this. What a great fucking country compared to, here we have like these huge open air trash heaps all over South Africa. And I mean, there isn't a street you drive down in South Africa where someone hasn't just dropped some trash as they walk.
Yeah.
Singapore are an example to everyone of how we should behave. If we ever have an alien invasion and we behave like Singapore, they'll take us seriously. If there's an alien invasion and we behave like we do, they'll just turn around and leave.
Yeah, it's, I mean, look, they're very organized. And isn't it like the second most dense country in the world in terms of population?
Yeah. Because, I mean, it is tiny. It's a city, basically. And it's so beautiful. They've got the most amazing buildings.
6 million people.
Yeah, it's beautiful buildings. And it's just, I mean, it's a dictatorship. So it's not a democracy.
Yeah.
But it's a benevolent dictatorship. It's run by people who actually have the interests of the society at large as their priority. Mm.
Is that what people think Rwanda is?
Well, yeah, I mean, they talk about Paul Kagame, and they say that at least Rwanda. Listen, I mean, there's lots you could say about Rwanda being a terrible place and a bad place and not necessarily the freest place in the world, but that guy keeps an iron grip on people. And again, it starts with the little things like trash, you know. If our politicians, if our leaders took rubbish seriously, and the only people who take rubbish seriously in this country are those poor rubbish collectors, who I wish well, because they're actually doing more to save the environment than any environmentalist person in a suburb who's driving a Tesla. Those people are actually picking shit up and gathering it together and taking it somewhere. So at least they're cleaning up around them and around us, because we can't even keep ourselves clean. I have a warm kind of feeling when I see those people pushing that stuff around, because at least you know it's being either recycled, or if it's being thrown away, it's being collected before it gets thrown away, so it's not just lying in the streets.
I think that's one thing. It's even a poetic, not in such a good way, there's even a poetic sense to this in that you have, I mean, the widest the gap in terms of between the rich and the poor in this country, and most of the time you find that people who are on the lower end of the spectrum are the ones who get to do the dirty work, like picking up the trash.
Mm-hmm.
But where I'm going with this is that how painful it must be to go around picking after people who are doing much better than you.
Mm-hmm.
Even their trash is better than yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it must be soul destroying.
I mean, South Africa is one of the few countries where people make even a living out of picking up trash.
Mm-hmm.
And you know these guys who walk around with like big bags, who collect like cans to go and sell them in the middle of the night, man. I mean, how unique is that? It's also one of the most heartbreaking things to see.
Well, it shows you how desperate some people are, but it also shows you how innovative and ingenious they are. They're so resourceful that they find a way of turning trash into, you know, making a living. Because they're not doing it out of the kindness of their hearts. They're actually making some money out of it. Not a lot, but they're making a living, which is more than I can say for, you know, those of us who just drop our shit where we walk. I mean, I've never understood that. If you see people doing that and it doesn't upset you, then you're just not paying attention. You know, you're not paying careful enough attention to the way the
look. I'm OCD. I'm OCD. So my levels of it's behavior that I really struggle with. How you can make a mess and not pick up after yourself. It's just like it's something I'll never be able to understand myself, because I think somehow it's a metaphor for how you view your own life and how you conduct yourself, even in your social spaces.
Yeah.
Like how you, whether it's business or your relationships, I don't see how a person who doesn't pick up for themselves can actually be a good partner in a relationship.
I completely agree with you. I wouldn't be able to live with someone who's a messy person. There's not a chance. I mean, it would drive me crazy. It's all I'd think about. I've got to throw some of these comments in before we break for 7 o'clock. Jeremy says, I feel sorry for the environment in South Africa. Rubbish thrown everywhere. I've stopped doing street and beach cleanups because the citizens just don't care. Jared says Sweden has to buy trash from neighboring countries because their trash incinerators are too efficient and don't have enough trash in Sweden alone to run. That's amazing. You buy other countries. Yeah, you buy other countries' trash. And Yonda says, I watched a documentary on Singapore 2 weeks ago. From desalination, underground roads, buildings on top of buildings, growing plants inside and upwards, 3D printing, that's a country of the future. Yeah, I think that's so good. That's just amazing. We have to be kind to the trash collectors in South Africa, says Hermine. We divide our trash so they don't have, so that they can have a single bag with recyclables that they can just take and they don't have to go through all that horrible shit. Yeah, because if you put like food scraps in with glass and they're trying to, what they're trying to do is separate it into glass, plastic, paper, because that's the stuff they can recycle and they can get paid for. But they don't get paid for chicken bones and like ashtrays and all that other shit we throw out. So that's really cool that Hermine brings that up because it's a, that's something we could all do. It's very impressive to do that. And I
just separate trash. I never thought about it. That's actually a fantastic idea.
Yeah, very nice. All right, when we come back, we've got lots of things to talk about. We've got O'Neill Madumo with us this morning, and we're going to get your comments on YouTube. You can also comment by sending us a WhatsApp to 0797482090. Let us know what is up. It is Wednesday on CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com.